ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
It's one of the underlying principles of America's judicial system. Everyone deserves their day in court. But just because all people are guaranteed the right to bring their grievances or defend themselves in a court of law does not necessarily mean they're all treated equally. On this edition of UWM Today, we're talking about our court system and asking how we can ensure that our courts are more effective and equitable. Our guests today are Tina Freiberger, a professor and chair of the Criminal Justice Department at UW-Milwaukee, and Rafael Ramos, an attorney with Legal Action of Wisconsin, where he serves as coordinator for Legal Action's Eviction Defense Project. Welcome to both of you. And Tina, let's begin with you. Courts are supposed to be blind. In fact, we have that wonderful statue of justice with a blindfold over her face. And yet, in your research, you see it isn't always so.
Yeah, that's true. And so there has been a lot of initiatives and laws that have been passed to try to make sure that the courts are equitable and that certain factors not related to the offense for which people are being sentenced for, such as race, gender, and age, affect sentencing decisions. However, in 15 years of doing research on sentencing decisions, I've actually found in quite a few different areas that that's not the case. Unfortunately, these factors do impact the sentences that people receive. And I've recently done research right here in Milwaukee County and found the same to be true, that even though once all these other things are equal, such as the person's prior record, the severity of their offense, there still is an impact where females are less likely to get probation than females are more likely to get probation than the males versus jail. And Black defendants are more likely to get jail than white defendants in the county. So, you know, this really causes us to be concerned about justice and about how equitable our courts are. But this isn't just about criminal courts either. There's also issues in civil courts. So in criminal courts, a person has a right to an attorney, and hopefully that increases their chances of being treated fairly. However, in civil cases, such as like eviction cases, a person actually doesn't have a right to an attorney.
And that's a surprise to, I think, a lot of people who may think that if you get in a bind and you have a legitimate issue or legitimate concern, for example, with a landlord, that you would have some help there on your side. But often people are left to swim in the stream of law by themselves.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon, like a couple of years ago in Milwaukee County, fewer than 1% of people facing eviction actually had legal representation. So they're going to court. They don't know what to expect. They don't know how the system works. And so things are really stacked against them at that point.
Okay, Rafael, let's talk about specifically eviction. In your role with Legal Action, you're involved in an entire defense project for people who are finding themselves put out on the street. How did you come about to creating a separate program? Is it because of the research that Tina just referenced?
Essentially, yes. When you look at the issue of eviction and compare it to other cases within the court, other litigation, what we saw historically is that there's been what we refer to as a justice gap in terms of representation, in terms of fairness between tenants and landlords. As Tina referenced, less than 1% of tenants had representation. We looked at numbers in 2016, and there were over 13,450 cases filed. So in all of those cases, what we looked at when we pulled the numbers is that out of those thousands of cases, 112 tenants actually had lawyers. So it's less than 1%. Conversely, when you look at the number of landlords that have representation, it's about 50. And there's an obvious gap there in terms of the amount of representation that's given to each party. And it makes sense when you think about it. Landlords generally have more resources. They have the choice as to whether they have representation, whether they get counsel or not. Tenants who are being evicted, just given the inherent circumstances of eviction, often don't have resources. They don't have the chance or choice to get counsel. They oftentimes don't have access to legal representation. My law firm, Legal Action of Wisconsin, has one full-time housing attorney. The Legal Aid Society of Wisconsin is the other big nonprofit in Milwaukee, and they have functionally two. And those are really the main sources of free legal assistance for tenants facing housing and eviction issues. Once you get past that, there is no real representation available for people of modest means.
So do judges take this into account when they are looking across the courtroom and they see a landlord with an attorney and all the resources to interpret the law and to make an aggressive case on behalf of the landlord versus that individual who's standing there who perhaps is in a courtroom for the first time? Is there any waiting that goes on the part of a judge?
Well, that's a great question. And with respect to evictions, they're addressed first by court commissioners and then by a judge. But all of those court officials, they really are in an unenviable position, right? Because they're dealing with thousands and thousands of cases per year. And they're also in a position where they, as arbiters of justice, have to be neutral. So they can't advocate for one side versus the other. But I do think they try, when given the chance, to be fair, to give unrepresented parties, pro se parties, we call them, the chance to understand what's going on. But when you're put in a position like you are in an eviction court, where you have 40 to 60 cases every afternoon, every single day, there's not a lot of time. And they don't necessarily have the time or are in a position to actually tell people what their rights are, what legal defenses they may or may not have. That's why counsel is so important. At our project, the Eviction Defense Project, we launched in 2016, and we use pro bono volunteers, volunteer attorneys, to provide representation to tenants who otherwise wouldn't have a lawyer. Again, that project was crafted as a direct response to the lack of representation. So we're trying to use pro bono attorneys to fill that gap and to help give people access to the information that they probably can't get from the courts, they can't get on their own. And give them a fair chance to actually pursue all of the different opportunities they may have in the legal system.
Tina, when you have done research in this area, have you had an opportunity to determine whether or not those clients that would go to legal action or legal aid, whether they're aware that these resources are out there,
yeah.
or are they sort of stuck in the blind?
Just through the research surveying individuals and doing observations, people aren't aware in a lot of cases that the Eviction Defense Project is there until they get to the courthouse, because their office is actually located right by the courtroom where the eviction cases are heard. So they do find when they get to the court that they have this service, and also word of mouth is kind of getting around too, that these things are available to them. And it is true. We've definitely seen through our research that, people sometimes come in and they don't realize they actually have a defense. So they do have a defense, but they don't actually realize that until they talk to an attorney and realize that they do have some ground.
So when you do present the findings of your research that demonstrate that there are some inequities in how justice is being administered, do people working in the court system get it? Do they appreciate that there's an imbalance here with black males, for example, as you cited, being penalized more heavily than their counterparts who are white?
Yeah, it does really speak to people. But we do also have to, when it comes to things like, looking at race and ethnicity and gender and stuff, when we look at those factors and how they influence decision making, we also want to kind of dig deeper into why those things are occurring, because it is quite possible that there are reasons that the numbers themselves are not just showing. So for instance, I did some research on sentencing in Pennsylvania, and what I found was once we controlled for females being sole caretakers of children, it actually wiped out the gender disparity in sentencing. So what judges were doing was females were just more likely than males to be sole caretakers of children. And so in that scenario, when it was one of these cases where it could go either way, you know, the person could get community supervision or they could get jail, the judges were just more inclined to go in the direction of community supervision because of the social cost of society of finding 24-hour substitute care for children.
And the desire to keep kids together with that mother, with the parent, in this case, the sole parent, just as often as possible.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
What about with the black males we were talking about? Any evidence of why the disparity exists there?
You know, the research that we've completed so far has just looked at sentencing decisions. And what we found with black males is they're more likely to get jail over probation. And if they're younger, it actually makes them more likely to get jail over probation, whereas every other group being younger actually mitigated their sentence. It made them more likely to get probation. So it could be that young black males are just kind of being viewed unconsciously as more dangerous, so they're being sentenced more harshly. Or what we're trying to do with our research right now is try to kind of go back a step and look at how these factors influence pretrial release decisions. So how they influence whether somebody receives a bail or whether they receive like just a signature bond release where they can just leave on the promise that they'll return to court, and also the amount of bails or bond to see if there's discrepancies in that amount, or maybe the amounts are the same, but some individuals are more able to meet to post that bail, to pay for that bail than others are. And it could be that those things are influencing then somebody's likelihood of getting a sentence of incarceration
to jail. So it may not necessarily be racial bias. It may just be a series of factors that led up to the appearance in the courtroom that tipped a decision one way versus the other.
Yeah, it could be just a socioeconomic disparity, whereas some individuals are less able to pay their bond. And we know that if somebody is sitting in jail prior to being sentenced, once they're actually sentenced, it's not uncommon for them to get a sentence of jail for time served or maybe time served plus a couple extra days.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio today, Tina Freiberger. Tina is professor and chair of the Criminal Justice Department at UWM, and alongside her, Rafael Ramos, who's an attorney with Legal Action of Wisconsin. Rafael is also coordinator for Legal Action's Eviction Defense Project. And as you listen to Tina describe some of the reasons why we may have this imbalance in terms of the administration of justice, Rafael, as an attorney, as someone who represents people who often are members of a minority community, are you frustrated to hear this? As you know, the fact that the cards may not be dealt in a fair way in the courtroom.
I mean, it is of course frustrating, right? When you see that people are not having access to equal treatment or equal outcomes. You know, when you look at the courts, the idea behind them is that we're supposed to be looking for justice. We're trying to find the just result, the true and correct outcome. And you can't have that when people are being treated unequally or when people don't have representation or when they don't come to court. I mean, I think one of the things that you can see just societally, but particularly within respective eviction court, is that I believe that the perception that the public has of the court system has a direct impact on their willingness to participate in it, where if you don't believe that you're going to be treated fairly, if you don't believe that you'll actually have a chance to have your day in court, to be heard in court, then you won't come. You know, when you look at eviction proceedings, we're talking about a proceeding where a person can lose their house. I mean, this is as personal, as important a situation as you could have. Yet even in those incredibly dire circumstances, only about half of the people show up for court. And I think a lot of that has to do with perceptions of procedural fairness, people believing that, you know what, if I go to court, whether I go or not, it's not going to make a difference. It doesn't matter. And that's one of the things we're trying to overcome. Trying to show them that by coming to court, it is possible to obtain a better outcome. Maybe not, you know, a perfect outcome, but it your odds of getting a better result for you and your family increase and they improve. And that's one of the things that we've asked Tina to look at in terms of her research and follow up with our clients is to see, do you feel like you've actually been treated more fairly by the courts because you had an attorney? Do you feel like your outcome changed because you had an attorney? And generally the responses to that, and I can let Tina talk about it more, is that the answer is yes, overwhelmingly yes. So if you have a system that's supposed to be getting to the truth of matter, whether in civil court or criminal court, you need a system that people believe in, that they want to participate in. And giving them the chance to have representation and striving for more consistent application of the law, more consistent delivery of outcomes and sentencing, that increases that public perception with respect to the actual legitimacy of the court system.
It sounds like in addition to trying to fix the court system, there's also a big communication issue here. You could have the best court system in the world, but as you point out, Rafael, if people say, I'm not going to get a fair shake, so I'm just not going to go. The odds of success there are what? Virtually zero if you don't show up, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't come to court, the court will enter what's called a default judgment against you in almost all circumstances. There may be some exception. But generally, if you don't come to court, the court will enter a default judgment where essentially they grant the request for the party that did show up.
So Tina, talk about the research. When you do talk to people who have their day in court or choose not to take advantage of their day in court, what do you hear from them as they describe their experiences or their attitudes towards the judicial system?
Yeah, well, when people come in, they are very stressed out, and these cases really have a huge impact on their lives. So we talk to them about that. You know, a lot of them, if they're employed, they have to miss work for the eviction case. Their children have to miss school. And they also report that it has negative impacts on their health and just kind of overall well-being. So they come in very stressed out. And it really means a lot to them. It's to say the majority is to really downplay it, because it's almost every single person that we've talked to has said that they feel that their outcome was better because they had representation. And they also just feel it makes a big difference to people just to feel like somebody listened to them and that they were heard, even if the outcome was not an ideal outcome. Even if in the end they were evicted, they still felt that way, that it was very important to them to have somebody kind of that they felt was on their side and that was hearing them out and really trying to help them. So that really makes a difference. So we talk about, intended consequences of trying to better the case outcome, to try to get cases sealed and things like that. But there's also these unintended outcomes that are really meaningful to people, just to make court less scary, to feel supported, to not be alone when they have to go and talk to the court commissioner. So those things have really had a big impact for people.
So Rafael, when you hear this, you see the gratitude that people have for services like you provide, you can only do so much. You mentioned that there are only a handful of individuals, for example, between your organization, Legal Defense, and Legal Aid that are representing people in cases of eviction. And yet, 13,000 evictions last year, I think you said?
13,000 in 2016. It actually went up to over 14.
So even more. You don't have the capacity today, do you, to provide free legal aid to all of those people?
Unfortunately, no, we don't. We through our Eviction Defense Project, we've been able to more than quadruple the rate of representation by using the volunteer attorneys that I was talking about. But unfortunately, even with that significant increase in representation, there's still a large percentage of the population that just doesn't have access. We don't have the resources to do it. But that's not something that's impossible. Other places like New York, San Francisco have implemented what they call right to counsel in eviction cases where, similar to criminal courts, tenants facing eviction have a right to an attorney. So it is possible to do. It is something that would be a wonderful outcome, but we are unfortunately not there yet.
So you're not proposing that there would be necessarily an attorney provided for every civil case, but in these dire situations where your home, your house, your family unit is in danger of being broken up, that's where you think that a case could be made that the system ensure that the individuals are represented.
So because of the nature of our funding, I'm not allowed to actually advocate for a type of policy change. But what I can tell you is that what they've done in New York and what they're trying to do in San Francisco is exactly what you've described, where they're trying to provide representation to every tenant who's facing eviction. There are concepts that people refer to as civil Gideon, where people have a right to an attorney in civil cases the same way they would in criminal court. So those concepts do exist, and they are being advocated elsewhere. And they're certainly interesting and worthwhile things to pursue.
Tina, from a research standpoint, do you think that the evidence that has come out of your work could help convince both people who work in the court system and the general public that change is needed?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, undoubtedly, you know, the outcomes have been positive. And we've also talked to, like, the court commissioners and so forth. And there are benefits, too, to this, to just make the system run more efficiently. So when people have an attorney, a lot of times, you know, the attorneys know how the court system works. They know, you know, what to say. They know the language of the court and so forth. So that can also move things a little bit quicker. The other thing is that we've actually seen really great outcomes for the pro bono attorneys. So we also surveyed them and talked to them about their experience. And they really have a positive gave positive feedback about their experiences. They felt that, you know, volunteering for EDP, it improved their communication skills, their negotiation skills, their litigation skills, understanding of cultural differences, their ties to the community and the needs of the community. So it also is a great experience for attorneys who maybe don't spend a lot of time in the courtroom to be able to use those skills.
Rafael, are you hopeful that we're headed in the right direction? There have been so many stories. Journal Sentinel has done a phenomenal job over the last couple of years looking at the impact that evictions have on the family unit, on people's lives. Are those stories making a difference today?
They are. Absolutely, they are. The stories that you read about some of the more exploitative slumlords in the city led to direct action by the city attorney to help get rid of them. The stories that you read, like Matthew Desmond's Evicted, have inspired people to participate and try to address these sort of societal concerns. A lot of our volunteer attorneys volunteered because they read that book, because they read the stories in the Journal Sentinel. So I am hopeful. You know, things like stories like that help gather the support, create the momentum that gets volunteers out participating, that gets support from, you know, for example, our funder, Legal Services Corporation. I am very hopeful that our city is heading in the right direction. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but it's not impossible.
Is there anything the average person can do? I'm sitting here listening to these horror stories of people, you know, so discouraged that they don't even come to court, you know, literally seeing themselves not only thrown out on the street, but their possessions thrown out on the streets. You know, what can we do to try to make a difference here?
There are things that people can do. You know, everyday citizens, for people in a position where they are being evicted, they can go to court. They can try to find legal representation. For people who are fortunate enough that they're not facing those circumstances, a lot of good organizations that do work related to this, where they can certainly find a way to participate and get involved. I think there's a lot of opportunity for improvement in the system, and people can find it.
And if nothing else, perhaps become less judgmental when you realize that the system is not perfect, and if nothing else, perhaps advocate for people working in the system to do more, and for, in some cases, perhaps, as we talked, changes in law that might provide greater assistance. I know you can't advocate for that, but as moderator or host of the show, I guess I certainly can. Tina, next steps on your research. Where do you see yourself going, especially knowing how much is on the line when you talk about people losing their homes and not getting a fair shake in the courts?
Yeah, so the research I'm doing with Legal Action Wisconsin with the Eviction Defense Project, that'll continue. And so we'll continue to look at the impact of the program as well as the impact that it has on individuals. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to continue to investigate just the sentencing process and the decisions that are made in Milwaukee County and just just kind of look back and look at pretrial release decisions and also to maybe charging decisions, because it can be that the district attorney's office is making different recommendations for different individuals in similar situations, and then to hopefully present that information to the officials in Milwaukee County in the court system, and to be able to, if change is needed, to be able to hopefully help facilitate that.
Well, and the great thing is that you referenced the work being done right here. I mean, you know, you're at UW-Milwaukee. You live here. You have students who are going to become part of that criminal justice system. And so your research informs local decision making. We're not talking about abstract ideas that may not relate to people here in southeastern Wisconsin.
Yes, exactly. And I'm really lucky to be able to do my work in Milwaukee County because the court systems are full of people that really do care, and they really are willing to listen and to change if that is something that makes sense, if that is necessary to have a more equitable system.
Great. Well, thank you both for joining us today. I mean, terrific research on your part, Rafael. Thank you for the great service by you and your colleagues at Legal Defense. And we wish you the very best as you both continue your work advocating on behalf of those who may not be able to afford the same sort of representation that many of us otherwise would.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Tina Freiberger, professor and chair of UWM's Criminal Justice Department, and Rafael Ramos, an attorney with Legal Action of Wisconsin, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.